Good morning. Let's go ahead and get started. This is a meeting of the Initiative Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I, Colorado Revised Statutes. We are, or the date is April 16th, 2008. The time is 8:34 a.m. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Blue Spruce Conference Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. The title board today consists of the following. My name is Bill Hobbs. I'm Deputy Secretary of State, and I'm here on behalf of Secretary of State Mike Kaufman. To my right is Dan Domenico, Solicitor General, who is here on behalf of Attorney General John Southers. And to my left is Sharon Eubanks, Deputy Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, who is the designee to the board of the Director of the Office of Legislative Legal Services, Charlie Pike. Ms. Eubanks will be sitting as the Director's designee for the first five agenda items for this morning's agenda. And then I believe this afternoon, Dan Carton will sit as the Director's designee on the title board for the remaining agenda items. Just some general information about procedures. For anybody who wishes to testify on any of the agenda items, there are sign-up sheets on the table by the door. The hearing is broadcast over the internet on the Secretary of State's website and of course, is a recorded meeting, a formal recorded meeting. There's basically three steps that the title board follows when it considers a measure for the first time. One is the we hear from the proponents and have an opportunity for the title board members to ask questions of the proponents. It's important that the title board understand the measure, and that's the first step. The second step is for the title board to determine if it has jurisdiction to set a title, and that necessarily requires the board to determine if each measure complies with the single subject requirement of the Constitution. And then third, if the board determines that it does have jurisdiction to set a title, then it will proceed to work on titles using a staff-prepared draft, and copies of the staff drafts, I believe, are on the table by the door. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the board. Anyone who is dissatisfied with the decision of the board may file a motion for rehearing within 7 days of today's date. And I should have mentioned also by way of introductions to my far right is Ceci Gomez of the Secretary of State's office. And of course the board is not concerned with the merits of any proposal, but only with the setting of fair and accurate titles. With that, I'd like to turn to the first agenda item, 2007-2008, number 86, Colorado Housing Investment Fund. And if we could hear from a representative of the proponents, if you would introduce yourself for the record, please. Good morning.
Good morning. Cara Beach for the proponents.
Any introductory remarks, or I'll just see if there's questions.
Get going.
Okay. Are there any questions of Ms. Beach? Ms. Eubanks.
Good morning. I just have a few questions on, I guess we don't have page numbers on the measure, but it's in section 4 of the measure when it's talking about the rate of the real estate transfer tax that's imposed. It talks about for each $100 or major fraction thereof. And I'm just curious what a major fraction is.
More than 50%.
More than 50%. Okay. And then also, in terms of when the real estate transfer tax would start to be imposed, I'm a little confused because Section 4 internally says January 1st, 2009, but then in Section 6 of the measure on the effective date, it says that Section 4 takes effect July 1st,
2009? That Section 4, or sorry, not Section 4, Section the effective date would be for Section 4 would be July 1st, 2009.
Even though you've got a January 1st, 2009 internal date in Section 4?
Yes.
And then my last question is in regard to Section 5. Is it fair to say that this provision requires the General Assembly to enact legislation to further the purpose of this article, and specifically has to enact legislation that's listed there, the specific types? That,
yes.
Would that be? Could you tell me, and I'm looking at the very last phrase, of the items that are specifically listed, the requirement for the General Assembly to establish the means for calculating annual inflation and how that relates to this measure in general in terms of affordable housing?
Yes, this actually referred to something that we've taken out after review of comment.
So at this point, even though it's requiring the General Assembly to enact legislation specifying how you calculate annual inflation, there's nothing in this measure that relates to inflation.
Correct.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I guess one question, since our next step is to consider whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement, and since we're also required in the titles to clearly express the single subject, how would you characterize the single subject of this measure?
The creation of the Colorado Housing Investment Fund and allocating revenue to that fund.
And maybe a related purpose sometimes is, what is the purpose of the measure? I'm maybe asking the obvious question, but how would you characterize the major purpose of the measure?
Oh, to establish a fund, the Colorado Housing Investment Fund, for the purposes of expanding the availability of affordable housing.
I'm taking that's kind of the key thing is affordable housing.
Yes.
The kind of the goal, right? Okay. Okay, if there's no other questions, we'll turn to the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement. Is there anything that you have to tell us on that? I have a couple of other people that are signed up to testify. Does anybody want to testify on the question of whether the measure complies with the single subject requirement? If not, then I'll just turn to board discussion on that question. Any discussion by the board? Ms. Eubanks?
I guess as I was reading through the measure, similar to the discussion that you've just had about what the single subject might be of this measure, it seems that it's along the lines of imposition of a real estate transfer tax to finance affordable housing. I mean, that's generally how I would characterize it. Unfortunately, I find it somewhat problematic that there's a provision requiring the General Assembly to enact legislation for the calculation of inflation when that has nothing to do with the provision of affordable housing or the imposition of the real estate transfer tax. So while I think most of the measure relates to that general subject, right now I'm not comfortable finding that there is a single subject because of that provision.
And would it be help me understand that a little bit better? I mean, would the argument on the other side be that that provision, even if it's a separate subject, is meaningless? It doesn't have any effect. Does that carry any weight with you.
Well, I'm sure there could be an argument on the other side, but it's a mandate upon the legislature to enact specific types of legislation, and one of the pieces of legislation would be calculating annual inflation, and that mandate doesn't seem to relate to anything in the measure. Although it may seem minor, I'm not sure how it fits into that general subject that I view the measure of, you know, imposition of the real estate transfer tax to provide affordable housing.
Is the problem that just wouldn't, it would be, we can't really understand then how the measure is going to work if the, as opposed to it really being a pure single subject issue, it's really more, there's part of this measure we really don't understand because, as you say, it's kind of a little loose statement there that requires something that's, I mean, the legislature could just say, well, we calculate inflation in this way, the typical way, but it doesn't have anything to do with changing the way this works. Because I understand what you're saying, but it does sort of seem that to reject the measure because of that, it doesn't seem material to me, I guess. And in addition, it sort of seems odd to call it a single subject problem when, if the measure just said the tax shall be adjusted for inflation or something along those lines, then the single subject issue would go away, but that doesn't really change the subject at all. Or so I understand the concern, especially since you're coming from the perspective of, if this were to pass, having to advise the General Assembly what they're supposed to do. I'm not sure under a single subject we can reject it for that reason.
Ms. Eubanks?
If I could respond, I don't know that I'd go so far as to say that I'm not sure that I don't understand the statement. I mean, calculation of annual inflation, the General Assembly does that for a variety of purposes. So in terms of what it's being asked to do, I think I understand that. In terms of why it's being told to do that, especially when you look at the beginning of that provision that says the General Assembly shall enact legislation as necessary to further the purpose of this article, and then including but not limited to these various items, including this last phrase regarding the calculation of annual inflation. Calculating the annual inflation doesn't further the purpose of this article because it doesn't relate to the tax. It doesn't relate to the provision of affordable housing. And so I'm sort of...
Right. I mean, I
understand it. It's not. I wouldn't view it as a major component of the measure. The trouble is that, to me, it doesn't relate to what otherwise I would think of as the single subject of the measure, because it has no relation to the tax or provision of affordable housing. That's.
So, is what you're saying that because this is in here, the fear or the concern is if the General Assembly follows this language and establishes a means for calculating annual inflation, it will, since it doesn't have any direct tie into the rest of this measure, somehow affect other government programs or be used, it will have to be some kind of just general statement of, this is how we, the General Assembly, calculate annual inflation for general purposes, even though it doesn't affect this? Or The concern I had originally was a little bit different than that, and it was that it could be that if somehow the General Assembly follows this, calculates, sets up a means of calculating inflation, that somehow then that would be read into an inflation component would be read into the substance of the measure, and something, maybe the tax rate or I don't know, something would be adjusted in here for inflation in a way that's not clear from the language just based on this requirement, and that's a different concern, I think, and I'm just not sure. My guess is the reason that was taken out is because it was understood that a tax rate of 4 cents on $100 by its nature takes into account inflation, because each $100 will go up. So I'm just not sure I see that statement having any effect on anything, really, even if the legislature has to say, well, even if the legislature decides it's going to follow that language literally, I don't know that it has any effect on how this measure would be carried out or anything else. And given that, it sort of seems to me it's not really a material concern.
Ms. Eubanks?
And I guess the way I'm viewing it is in terms of what the court has told us, for single subject, that a measure violates single subject if its text relates to more than one subject and if it has at least two distinct and separate purposes which are not dependent upon or connected with each other. While I would characterize the vast majority of the provisions of this measure dealing with the imposition of a real estate transfer tax for the provision of affordable housing, there's also a requirement for the General Assembly to enact legislation to calculate annual inflation that, to me, is not related or connected to the other purpose, which is the funding of affordable housing. And so that's basic. I mean, and I don't disagree with your characterization that this seems to be a minor feature of the measure, but it is a requirement on the General Assembly. I'm not so concerned with how, you know, in terms of what this means down the road, in terms of what the General Assembly actually does with this mandate. I'm concerned about meeting the guidelines that the court has told us on single subject, and it just seems like this provision, although minor, it's a requirement on the General Assembly to enact legislation calculating annual inflation, and I see no connection with the other purpose of this measure, which is the provision of affordable housing.
And maybe just the way I'm sort of seeing both sides of this argument, and I'd like to hear from proponents also, but on the one hand, sort of what I think I'm gleaning from what Ms. Eubanks is saying is, if you know, as we read the measure, there's a provision requiring the General Assembly to establish a means for calculating inflation that seems to have nothing to do with the measure. And it does seem, you know, just as you read the words on paper, it seems like that's a separate subject. Even if it's a minor one or a meaningless one, it seems like it's unrelated to the rest of the measure. I guess maybe arguing the other side is, it sounds like this is really an orphan provision, that apparently there was an earlier version that had a provision perhaps that this related to, and that's no longer there, and the inflation calculation requirement is a carryover, and it's simply meaningless, but it still is there to relate to the measure, and that's kind of reinforced by the language at the beginning of Section 5 that says that the General Assembly is supposed to do these things to further the purpose of this article. Even though, again, it looks like there's no purpose in the General Assembly actually doing anything, but that sort of makes me lean towards thinking it's still that the scope of this is limited just to the measure, even if it means the General Assembly does nothing. I don't know, Ms. Veach, would you like to comment on that?
Sure. Yeah, the proponent's position is that this doesn't rise to the level of a single subject violation, in part because of what Mr. Hofstra has said, that establishing the means for calculating annual inflation relates only to purposes of this article as set forth in the beginning of Section 5. And that this, if the legislature has to do something or not do something, it does it with respect to the calculation of inflation rate. That's not a separate independent subject from the creation of affordable housing opportunities.
No. It is kind of problematic, I think, but I probably lean towards thinking that given the statements on the record of the proponent's intent, that it's that it probably does not constitute a separate subject. But
kind of yeah, like, I mean, I courts are very reluctant to basically view a provision of an initiative as a nullity. That is, they go out of their way to give some meaning to every statement in a constitutional amendment. And that gives me a little pause, because I think it seems clear to me that that it really is not meant to have any effect on the current language of the amendment or on any other provision of the Constitution or law. But once it's on the books, I'm not sure it would be interpreted that way. And that was my concern, was that somehow a court might try to find some way to read an inflation component into that. I don't really know how. I mean, when you're everything in here is a ratio or a percentage. All the definition of low income, all the taxes are ratios, which by their nature don't need an inflation adjustment, which I assume is why that change was made. On the other hand, I could see a court saying, well, you've got this inflation language, so maybe this $500 we should adjust for inflation annually, or the $100 somehow, which I think would alter the way it's interpreted. And that to me is kind of just being unclear. To me, the concern is more that I'm unclear on how that provision would actually impact the measure itself, more than a pure single subject issue, because I think if there was something in here that it was tied directly to, Ms. Eubank's concern would go away. And it seems odd to say that this thing that's basically a nullity is another subject when it could be tied to it. So I don't know. I wish it wasn't in there, but I think I'm leaning towards voting in favor of it.
And I think you know, it will help just as a matter of legislative history that if you know, when a court is faced with interpreting it, that statements made today about the proponent's intent would certainly be taken into account. I guess just to see if what the sense of the board is, I guess I'll go ahead and make a motion that the board find that the measure comprises a single subject and proceed to set titles.
I'll second it.
That's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no.
No.
That motion carries 2-1. Then let's turn to the staff drafts. Ms. Gomez has displayed the staff draft on the screen in the room. Because the staff draft calls for a TABOR statement of the annual increase in taxes, I asked the Office of State Planning and Budgeting for an estimate of the revenue in the first full year, and OSPB provided an estimate, which I think copies of the estimate are probably on the table as well. So, Ms. Veach, let me ask you if you've had a chance to look at the staff draft, and do you have any comments?
Yes, just one comment in line 3, where it says the stock of affordable housing. This measure does more than create physical buildings, so I think it would be more appropriate to say to expand the availability of affordable housing rather than the stock.
Okay. Any other comments about the expression of the single subject? Pretty wordy. Ms. Eubanks?
Well, I would have a suggestion that I think goes a little bit more along the lines of how I was characterizing my view of the single subject. To me, the imposition of the transfer tax seems to be more important than the establishment of the fund. I mean, the fund is where those monies are deposited, but I don't know that I would include that in the statement of the single subject, that perhaps along the lines something like concerning the imposition of a real estate transfer tax to, and I don't whether it's to help finance, to help fund, to increase the availability of affordable housing, something along those lines. But to me, I would prefer to have the single subject include recognition of the imposition of the transfer tax rather than the creation of the fund.
That makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, I think, Ms. Eubanks, you're talking about maybe saying concerning, by an amendment, concerning the imposition of a real estate transfer tax
to expand affordable housing or to fund affordable housing. I'm open in terms of suggestions there, whether it's, you know, to expand the availability of affordable housing, something along those lines.
Yeah, well, you can take both those suggestions. You're basically suggesting swapping out establishing the investment fund for imposing a real estate transfer tax. But then you could take Ms. Veach's suggestion and just say concerning the imposition of a real estate transfer tax to expand the availability of affordable housing throughout the state.
And then would the measure go on to say, describe the tax? I think the reason it's written there is so that it says the fund, the tax, here's how we describe the tax. So it would say to establish the tax and the fund and then describe the tax?
That would be...
Yeah, you'd have to move the description of the fund somewhere else. Probably to somewhere in line 4.
Because I do agree that still the details of the transfer tax would be important.
Yeah, I mean, the two important things, I think, are that you're imposing a tax, and the reason you're imposing it is to expand the availability of affordable housing. So if both of those concepts are in the single subject, the fact that the way you're going to use the money is in the investment fund that's created is something you could describe later, right?
Right.
Yeah, I just didn't want to see the whole description of the tax in the front and then say, and subject.
No, I wouldn't want to go that detailed in the statement of single subject.
I think we're on the same page then.
Before we get too specific with that, or Ms. Eubanks, did you want to go on to other issues with the staff draft?
Well,
I was just going to find out if we had other people who wanted to testify about the staff
draft. I have other suggestions, just because I think there's a lot of... language and all that might be able to be condensed a little bit, but I don't know whether all of those are in connection there with clause and whether you want to do it bit by bit or not, single subject versus then the details.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy to start working through it. I guess I just wanted, if anybody else wanted to testify on the staff drafts, they could either comment now or as the need arises as we start working through potential changes to the titles.
A question with respect to those Eubanks changes. I think it is important that we are establishing the Housing Investment Fund. So can we say something to the effect of concerning the imposition of a real estate transfer tax or the establishment of a housing investment fund, and then keep the rest of that sentence, or the rest of those two lines?
Isn't the fund just a vehicle? I mean, isn't it really it's the tax to expand the availability of affordable housing? And the fact that when you have a tax, there's got to be a holding spot for it, and that's what the fund is. I mean, I don't see that the fund itself is central. I mean, it has to be talked about, I think, in the titles. But it seems to me the two central things here are the revenue for expanding the availability of affordable housing. Everything else is kind of mechanics and specifics. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the single subject to me is imposing a tax to be used, the revenue from which is to be used for affordable housing. But if you want to get a little more specific, that the revenue is going to be used to create a fund, and the fund will have as its mandate to expand the availability of affordable housing, that doesn't bother me either. I mean, I agree. My impression is that's not all that important, but it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me either way.
Ms. Eubanks?
I think I'm in agreement with you. I'm just not sure that I see the fund as being such a major component that it should be included in the statement of single subject. I agree it should be recognized later on in the title, but I just don't think, in terms of trying to come up with a clear, concise statement of the single subject, I think having that language there just makes it a very long statement, and I'm not sure that it really adds.
Can I suggest that Ms. Eubanks make the suggested changes so we can look at it and work from there in the single subject statement?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. So where you are, Ceci, in terms of establishment, strike that language through State Treasury. And substitute imposition of a real estate transfer tax. And then I might also suggest at the very end of that phrase, where it says throughout the state, it just might be shorter and clearer to say in Colorado.
And then there was the change from stock to availability.
Oh, yes.
I think.
I'm sorry.
I mean, do we even need in Colorado or throughout the state either one? I mean,
maybe not.
Constitution. I don't know. Either ones.
Seems to me it'd be sufficient to say just to expand the availability of affordable housing. Ms. Veach, you're okay with that?
Institution that it's just for. One comment just in response to the fund. The fund in this case gets money from the real estate transfer tax, but it's also monies from other public or private sources are also permitted to go into the fund. So it's a little bit different than what we normally see. So I would argue that we'd like to see the fund described in a single subject.
Well,
obviously after the imposition.
I'm assuming, I think Ms. Eubanks probably got a clearer clear goal in mind here that I don't want to interfere with because she's so good at this, but I'm assuming at some point, and possibly down in, I don't know, around line 7 or whatever, I mean, the next step may be just to explain the rate of the tax. We've said that this is, in the first part of this, we're saying taxes are increased and that, you know, that it concerns imposition of a tax and so forth, and then we could talk about the rate of the tax. But then it seems like we do need to say that the measure creates the fund comprised of the revenues from the tax and other sources. And I mean, theoretically, then we could pick up and say specifies the permissible uses of the fund or whatever, depending on how specific we need to get. But I think we would have to get into the fact that that a major feature of the measure is that it creates the fund for those purposes. I just don't think it needs to be stated as part of the subject, in my opinion. No, Mr. Banks, where were we? I don't know what you. You, like I say, I'm sure you've thought this through several moves in advance.
Oh, you give me way too much credit. although I recognize that the fund has different funding sources, both transfer tax as well as private and public sources, that component, at least from my perspective and experience with the legislature, that's not something new or different or very unusual. There's lots of funds that are created that have that opportunity for other sources to come in. I don't think, you know, to say that the major purpose of this is the creation of the fund, I'm perfectly fine, and I had envisioned including a phrase, you know, concerning the creation of the housing fund, and we can be specific as to the sources of revenues that are deposited in the fund. But I just don't see it as part of the single subject.
Do we want to, Ms. Eubanks, do you want us to go ahead and consider those changes before the
I would move the changes reflected on the screen.
I'll second that. If there's no other discussion, I want to give Ms. Veach one last chance. So the motion is to adopt those changes. Did you want to comment on that further, Ms. Veach?
Just one question. Where are you thinking of putting the establishment of the fund?
Basically, what I had envisioned, or in terms of my suggestion, would be probably down on line 7 now. After we talk about the rate of the tax, then we would talk about creation of the fund. You know, we could specify the sources of the revenues deposited in the fund, and then to me it's logical then you're specifying the permissible uses of monies in the fund. I mean, that's where I had envisioned putting a reference to the creation of the fund, but I don't know how the other board members would view that.
A suggestion, could we put it and in connection there with establishing the real estate fund, which real estate transfer taxes are deposited or something to that effect?
Where are you, Ms. Veach? In what line?
Line 4.
Okay. At the end where the cursor is?
Or after. No, after the single subject.
Oh, okay.
So sort of the first phrase of the trade.
Right.
I'm trying to think that through. I mean, it seems like logically the next thing is to, you've just said twice basically that there's a tax up to that point. I mean, you've said shall state taxes be increased by a certain amount by an amendment concerning the imposition of taxes. It seems like logically the next thing is to there provide the detail about the rate of the tax, and then later on we start talking about the fund. It seems like that would be a better place to say that it creates a fund for the revenues and from other sources. I mean, I know this is, it's clear this is really important to you, but it seems like you're kind of interrupting the thought there just to get that right up front, that it creates a fund.
Well, let me first say this. With respect to those changes that you've already...
We do have a motion and
yeah,
it's been seconded.
Sorry.
So all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Well, then I guess the question is what comes next. Ms. Eubanks, what was going to be your suggestion? What is your suggestion?
My suggestion was to have the phrase that is first right now, as it appears in the staff draft, about imposition of the tax and at what rate. I have some suggested changes to that language, but like I said, I had envisioned, you know, imposing the tax at a certain rate, creation of the fund, specifying monies, how the purposes for which monies in the fund could be used. That was sort of my thought process, but that's just me.
I mean, that does seem like the logical way to present the major features of the measure.
I mean, I think I agree with you guys. That's the more straightforward way to do it. You could simply write where the cursor is right after in connection therewith, just say creating a housing investment fund, comma, and then go on. But if you did that, you'd probably then, again, after the discussion of how the tax is calculated, again explain the fund, and then you're getting, in addition to sort of getting away from here's the tax, you're getting a little redundant if you have to do it this way. So I understand why they want, I think I understand why they want to have, the proponents want to have the funds declared somewhere early on, but I think if we were going to do that, the better way would have been to put it in the single subject. If we're not going to do that, I think I agree that the fund should be discussed after the calculation of the tax.
Say, right where the cursor is, creating a real estate transfer tax, all the way down to line 7, and it would say creation of the Colorado Housing Investment Fund, specifying how the purpose is.
That's where we're headed, I think. You know, you could, at the end of all the tax calculation, just say something like, to fund a newly established, or to fund a housing investment fund, or you could just say, creating, like in a separate clause, creating a housing investment fund to spend the revenue, or however we want to say it. But I've got some thoughts on cleaning up the language of the tax calculation, and I don't know if it's better to do that first or to resolve this issue of where to discuss the fund first.
I'm hearing the board members say that they probably at this point, and we can come back to it like you suggest, Mr. Domenico, but I think I'd like to see just what we do with this next clause as is, as far as explaining the rate of the tax. And then maybe if we want to revisit, what's the earliest point we can mention the fund, I'm okay with that. But I guess I'd like to hear from either Ms. Eubanks or Mr. Domenico about how to explain the calculation of the tax. Ms. Eubanks?
The way that statement currently appears in the staff draft, just thinking from sort of person on the street, it's pretty complicated and technical. And although I don't know that we can eliminate everything, I mean, because we want to talk about the major components of the tax, the suggestions I was thinking of was, one, based on the proponent's representations, I think it's important to talk about the date upon which this tax would be imposed, which my understanding would be July 1st, 2009, so maybe start out the phrase commencing July 1st, 2009, imposing a real estate transfer tax on certain real property transactions, and then at the rate of... because I'm not sure that giving all the details about, you know, the consideration. Consideration, that term to me is somewhat problematic because I'm not sure that most people will completely understand that term. And so whether or not we just say on certain real estate or real property transactions at the rate of, and then I didn't really have any change to the act. To currently how the staff draft sets forth the calculation of the tax, and I still had the one reference to consideration there later in the phrase. I think one option there, because it's consideration paid, maybe you switch out consideration paid and just say for of payments for the real property. That might be an option. But it just it seems very lengthy. It seems like we could make it a little bit more concise and lose a little bit detail. Whether you had more suggestions on the actual rate of the tax and how to describe it?
Those were pretty similar, actually, to my suggestions. Unless Mr. Hobbs has something else, I suggest you put those up, and then if I have anything different or in addition, I'll mention it afterwards.
Let's give it a try.
Okay. Right where you are. Insert commencing July 1st or July 1, 2009, then down on line 5, after the word tax, I would strike in the case of and substitute on, then after transactions, strike the language where the consideration exceeds $500 and which tax is to be imposed to raise revenue for the fund, then on line 7, strike consideration paid and substitute payments.
Those were basically my changes. I didn't. The date was new to me, but the only things I had that were different from that was I got rid of or a major fraction thereof, an extra 4 cents on $50 seems pretty immaterial to me, right? Which is all you're talking about there. If the price is $49, $1,049,000, you pay 4 cents less than if it's $1,051,000. I don't think that major fraction is just kind of odd and immaterial. So I would get rid of that. And then I would, instead of payment, I think paid, you could get rid of consideration is fine, but paid I think is
I would be fine
better
with that. To say paid for the real property. I think you'd strike the of prior to consideration.
Yeah, and I don't.
Okay, would you want me to strike?
That's my recommendation. I think that's not material. The only other questions, I don't know if I even suggest this, but throw it out, is in lines 4 and 5, do we need to say real estate there on line 4 and even transfer on line 5? I mean, we've said it's a real estate transfer tax on line 3, then we're saying it's a tax imposed on real property transactions, which is, to me, a synonym for a real estate transfer tax. So, we could I thought we maybe could consider getting rid of either just real estate on line 4 or real estate transfer on lines 4 and 5. But I don't...
Oh, it would read just imposing a tax?
Imposing a tax on certain real property transactions. Or imposing a transfer tax on real property transactions. I'm okay with it as is or with either of those changes.
I'm fine with either of those.
Well, then I say we get rid of real estate transfer if everybody's okay with it. I don't know if the proponent, if it bothers the proponents.
No, I just think it's important to have the word real property transactions in there, so it's that the actual transaction.
Yeah, I would leave that. I would definitely leave that.
So you're thinking of striking, it's like imposing...
A tax or imposing a transfer tax on certain real property transactions.
And then, and kind of right where you are right now, which is, well, I'll interrupt.
Sure, I'm done.
It seems redundant to say imposing a real estate transfer tax to expand the availability of affordable housing in connection therewith, imposing a real estate transfer tax. Can we say setting the transfer tax rate on certain real property transactions at 4 cents on every $100.
The only problem I have with that is that implies, I think, that there's already a transfer tax and this is just adjusting the... And I understand, this is just adjusting it. I understand what you're saying because in the single subject statement we've said already imposing a tax and
would
now we're saying...
Would creation there be more accurate
imposing.
Then?
Yeah, I mean, we get into these redundancies because the first statement is supposed to be a separate statement of the single subject and then the second part of it is supposed to be here's everything it does. And so since the single subject is usually... part of what it does, it's sort of redundant. You know, if you wanted to change that, creating a real estate transfer tax, that would be okay.
Line
but
three. If we can change that to creating, and then it shows that it's new, run into the confusion we just talked about.
I mean, would it help? I don't know whether this is responsive or not. But granted, in line three, we've already said it concerns the imposition of a real estate transfer tax. Could we say imposing the tax at a rate of 4 cents for each $100 paid on certain real property transactions?
I have a kind of a new concern as to what Mr. Domenico raised, is that does this let people know that they're creating a new transfer tax, which maybe we should put in line three, rather than imposing? Because I don't want it to seem like we're just upping the amount, but in fact they're
creating.
Well, it depends on whether we're talking about line 3 or line 4.
Okay.
Creation of a real estate transfer.
I don't know. Yeah, or imposition of a new real estate transfer tax.
I like creation.
You like what?
Creation.
Okay. I'm okay with that.
And then, so would we stay with imposing on line 4, or?
Yeah, I think then line 4 would say imposing a transfer tax, right? That was to take out real property.
Yeah, you could either get rid of real estate or real estate transfer, but I don't have a problem with creation in line 3. Just to avoid the redundancy. That's fine with me. Why don't we change that to creation? And then my other suggestion is, let's see, now it's on line 4, imposing a, and then delete real estate, and then we could also get rid of transfer, I think, there, but I don't mind leaving it in if we want to make clear that it has to do with transactions and it's not.
We'd prefer to keep it in there just to make it very clear. Tax on real property, but just on the transaction.
Yeah, I mean, and I think Mr. Hobbs suggested changing the A to a the.
And I was thinking that would help make the link that it's the same text we just said.
I think that's a good change. I mean, I think it's okay either way, but that's probably better.
Right.
Yeah, that would be changed to
the. Did Mr. Hobbs
the
say imposing the transfer tax?
Yeah, his other suggestion, I think, was to move the rate up to before you talk about transactions again.
Sure.
So it would be imposing the transfer tax at the rate of, cutting all that language, at the rate of 4 cents for each $100 paid for the real property.
It would read.
Well, you might be able to, you might end up changing a little bit of that language afterwards. So it, I think the way it would end up having to read is something like, imposing the transfer tax at the rate of 4 cents for each $100 paid in certain real property transactions, or something like that. That's pretty good. That gets rid of some of the redundancy. So, yeah, then you would insert there at the rate of 4 cents for each $100.
Paid
in
and get rid of the on.
Yeah.
Before certain.
Yeah, and then you delete the
rest of the language in that phrase that we haven't already.
And all the way down to line 8, actually. Delete for the real property also. And then that's where we need to put in the statement about the creation of the fund.
And we.
I'll go ahead and move those changes then.
Second.
That's been moved and seconded, and that includes the changing of the word at the end of line 2 from imposition to creation. If there's no other discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Shall we create the fund, Ms. Eubanks?
Sure. So right where the cursor is, we'd say creating a Colorado Housing Investment Fund. And then the question is how we describe, you know, we could say consisting of transfer tax and other revenues. If we think it's important to reflect the sources, I might be okay just saying creation of the fund, but I get the impression that perhaps the proponents might like a little bit more detail in terms of the funding sources, so perhaps.
I mean, it looks like it just says any monies received for the fund from any other public or private source.
Right.
Is that
so
the
it's
language?
Basically, yeah. You sort of your gifts, grants, donations option. I mean, originally I had thought, you know, to say to which transfer tax revenues are credited. We could say which, in which transfer tax and other revenues are credited.
I mean,
if we need to.
I'm concerned about, because that kind of implies that there really are other revenues that this measure is going to be bringing in. And I'm inferring, and I'm going to ask for some comment on this, that in reality, it's really not anticipated that there's going to be other revenues. Now, the fund can accept other public or private sources, but there's no mechanism for that. It's just that that I can recall.
That's correct. That it we've created the fund so that it's possible to do, but the initiative does not set up another mechanism to divert revenue into the fund.
So So there's, I mean, there's a bit of judgment here. Is that a significant part, a portion of the measure, to reference the fact that there theoretically could be some other sources of revenue?
I don't think that other revenue is important enough to put into the.
Okay. Thank you.
So do we think it's important enough to reference that the transfer tax revenues go to the fund?
I think so.
Okay. So if we say creating a Colorado Housing Investment Fund to which transfer tax revenues are credited? Mama?
Sounds good to me. Shall we stop and do a motion?
I would move that change.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
The phrase beginning on line 9 that starts specifying how monies in the fund are to be allocated between distribution on a statewide basis and distribution to local government. I'm not sure the details about the, you know, portion of the funds being allocated on a statewide basis versus distributed to local governments is really important, and especially we haven't given a lot of detail or any detail about how that happens, whether we just say specifying how monies in the fund are to be allocated for affordable housing purposes.
No, I thought you could, in the beginning of line 9, you could delete that entire specifying how monies are to be allocated, and in line 9, just say specify, line 8 and 9, specifying the allocation and permissible uses of monies in the fund, and delete that entire next question. You could, if you wanted to, put in there that some reference back to affordable housing might be a good idea.
So if we say specifying the permissible uses and allocation of monies in the fund for affordable housing purposes?
Yeah.
So where you are, Ceci, in terms of inserting an allocation, and then after fund and before the comma, insert for affordable housing purposes. And then striking the whole next phrase. To the next comma.
All the way to government.
On line 11.
Line 11.
Some other measures we've said what is being allocated or how it's being allocated out of the fund, but we're fine with it saying an allocations of monies in the fund.
Okay.
I would move that change.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
Down on line 12, the phrase making the division of housing in the Department of Local Affairs the fund administrator, I just don't see that as being a major component of the measure, and I would suggest just removing it.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Yeah, makes sense.
I move that change.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
And then on the last phrase, I'm not sure that authorizing is the correct word, whether it's requiring, because it seems more than just authorizing the General Assembly to enact legislation to further the purposes of the measure. And I would also, so in terms of changing authorizing to requiring, and then I would also suggest changing the word amendment to measure.
Any comment?
Requiring or directing it is fine.
So I would move those changes.
Second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. I suppose then if we should fill in the blank with the amount of the tax, if we go by the estimate from the Office of State Planning and Budgeting, I think the amount is $24.6 million. Any concern about that amount, Ms. Beach?
Right now, that's the best number.
Okay. I'll move that change.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. So Ms. Gomez has shown how then the title would read with all of those changes. Since I need to do this for the record anyway, probably, and for those that have been unable to follow what we're doing if they're listening online, let me just go ahead and read then how the title would read based on the changes we've made so far, with the understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause that begins with what is now line 9. The title would read, state taxes shall be increased $24.6 million annually by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning the creation of a real estate transfer tax to expand the availability of affordable housing, in connection therewith, commencing January 1, 2009, imposing the transfer tax at the rate of $.04 for each $100 paid in certain real property transactions, semicolon. I can't really tell, but I'm assuming it's a semicolon. Creating a Colorado Housing Investment Fund to which transfer tax revenues are credited, semicolon. Specifying the permissible uses and allocations of monies in the fund for affordable housing purposes, semicolon. Exempting revenues from the real estate transfer tax from state and local government revenue and spending limits, semicolon. And requiring the General Assembly to enact legislation to further the purposes of the measure, period. Ms. Eubanks?
Just to be consistent with the way we sort of were doing the shorthand references to transfer tax, I think that on line 7, the real estate should be stricken there, because every place else we just refer to transfer tax. And so I would move that change.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any further changes? I'll move then that the staff draft, that the board adopt the staff draft as amended, again with the same changes in the ballot title and submission clause, which is the same except that it begins, shall state taxes be increased $24.6 million. Annually, etc.
Second.
That's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That concludes action. On number 86, the time is 9:44 a.m. The next item on the agenda is 2007-2008, number 88, severance tax. Again, for the record, the time is 9:45 a.m. Let's first hear from proponents, if we could, and see if there's any questions from the board. Do we have somebody representing? Oh, thank you. Sorry. Mr. Ramey, good morning. If you want to just introduce yourself for the record, we'll. And if you have any.
Ramey, Isaacson Rosenbaum, representing proponents of number 88. And I guess I would just say initially, and then I'd like to respond to any questions of the board have. This is another in a series of severance tax initiatives. Structurally, it obviously has differences from the ones you've seen before, the big one being that there's a broader coalition of uses or the funds being generated. Structurally, I would just note to the board similarities and differences. There is a rate change and leveling out in this one, somewhat a little different from what you've seen before. The stripper well exemption is eliminated. The ad valorem property credit, again, eliminated. There is a point of taxation change, which I'm sure the members of the board know, measure that has not appeared in the other measures. And there is a, I guess I kind of think of it as a stabilization tank through which the revenues generated by the tax will go on their way to their ultimate. Those are the basic structural changes. And of course, then there's the percentage differences. Broader spectrum of uses. I guess, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to respond to any concerns or questions the board might have.
Any questions for Mr. Ramey? Ms. Eubanks?
I knew you would. I've gotten my education on severance tax from Ms. Eubanks, so I'm about to get some more.
I've got several questions, the first being in terms of sort of the difference of the imposition of the tax in this measure versus sort of current law. And not that I understand the way it's currently done, but for example, in the definition of gross income on your new language in the Rome 2, so it's the 3A Rome 2, you talk about the net amount attributable to the first sale of the oil and gas. And just in comparing it to the existing language, it just says sale. And right. So could you explain to me the significance of that change?
I think that, Ms. Eubanks, ties in primarily to the point of taxation change. What we're attempting to do in this provision is tax the operator, which is a defined term in here as well, so that the tax will fall upon the person who exercises the right to control the severance and the first sale or transfer in kind of the oil and gas. The tax will not fall on subsequent royalty interests as the current one does. So it is that first sale, either by way of a sale for money or a transfer in kind, one or the other, that is being taxed under the point of taxation. And that's the point of taxation change. And that definition of change of gross income.
Okay, so then that would be consistent with the insertion of the reference to operator over on the next page in your section 3 of the measure that's amending 3929-105-1C, where it talks about from the sale of the oil and gas severed by the operator. That's all consistent with that. Can I ask another question in terms of that provision? You have the reference to operator there, and then later, which is reproduction of existing language, you talk about nothing in this paragraph C shall exempt a producer from submitting a production employee report, and I'm just wondering if now it's the operator, what does the producer have to do with? I and part of it's probably my ignorance of understanding I know that as part of some of the distribution of the revenues, it's based on employees located in counties.
Right.
But if the operator is now responsible for the tax, is the distribution still going to be based on
yes.
a producer's employees?
Now, that may give rise to a further amendment. I mean, we certainly dealt with this concept, but producer is another term. It is itself defined in a separate section. And I didn't bring the existing statute with me, but it is a defined term, and these production reports are required of the producer for the purposes indicated. We did not seek change, either that or the identity of the person filing the report, though that person in many cases would be the operator. Now, I don't want to suggest, Ms. Eubanks, that that's the best possible way to go forward, but and that may be something for tinkering in future years.
And
but
that's fine.
That was the intention here.
It just seemed like you're talking potentially two different categories of people.
And they are. I think there's an overlap between those categories.
Okay. And then in Section 6 of the measure, which is where you create the trust fund, you have your different accounts. In the discussion of the operational account, which is in the Rome 2, I think. Well, no, actually, it's, I guess I'm to the subsection 2 provision, where it talks about the distribution. In that paragraph A, where it talks about new energy economy programs, including but not limited to direct programs for communities and citizens, what's a direct program? Versus any other program. I don't know the significance of that terminology.
You're probably asking the wrong guy at this point to define that. That was, actually, can you give me a moment?
Sure.
I might be able to get an answer from the people to know. That was well considered language.
Okay, that's fine.
The question is, Eubanks, because the people involved in that particular piece of the constituency who like that word aren't present
okay.
in the room this morning. And I think I know the answer, but my fear is on the record I'm going to say something colossally stupid, and then we'll have to live with it as legislative history. So
that's fine.
I think I'll just request to live with the language at the moment.
Would you like to take a stab at explaining the collaboratory?
I can, yes. Yes, I can tell you what the collaboratory is. Though, I had to get a definition because I didn't know before this was prepared what that was. It is a research collaboration that is known by this name between the U.S. Department of Energy's National Renewable Energy Laboratory, Colorado School of Mines, Colorado State University, and the University of Colorado in Boulder. It is a research collaboration group that is known by that name as the.
And then I think my last question, in terms of the monies in the operational account, I mean, whether it's the 2A, 2B, C, D, well, actually it's through C, where it uses the word appropriated, I'm assuming that that refers to sort of the standard process by which the General Assembly appropriates monies?
Yes, I think that was language, Ms. Eubanks, that came out of the review and comment session. That was the way to get that 5% into the college opportunity.
Okay.
I hope that's the right.
Okay. Well, my question in terms of the use of that word on paragraph B, on 2B, that where it's basically for the native wildlife habitat,
right.
And I assume it talks about it shall be appropriated for the exclusive purpose. And it goes on, and it's to be, the monies shall be administered and overseen by the state board. Does that mean the monies are supposed to be appropriated to the GOCO board?
To the GOCO board, and they will administer, allocate the funds.
And
I suppose we could create a fund there to do that. We haven't done
that, but that's certainly.
What bothers me about that, or at least concerns me in terms of what that really means, is, you know, under the GOCO constitutional provision, the GOCO board is not part of the state. It's actually created as a political subdivision. It's not subject to the control of any state agency type thing. And generally, the General Assembly can only appropriate to state entities. It can only, because what an appropriation is, and Mr. Hobbs probably knows this better than I, you know, the General Assembly can appropriate to, because what appropriation is a spending authority. It authorizes a state entity to spend monies. And so if you're saying that monies are appropriated to the GOCO board and it's not a state agency, I'm just concerned that that may not be the correct way of getting the money sort of under the control of the GOCO board. I mean, because right now, you know, none of the monies in the GOCO trust fund are subject to appropriation because of this, you know, it's a political subdivision. It would be sort of like the General Assembly appropriating to a county or a municipality. I mean, they don't give spending authority to anything other than a state entity. And so I didn't know whether you were intending that you're changing the status of the GOCO board.
I'll answer that question, certainly no. It may be with regard to this provision that we do not have the ideal verb.
Okay, well, I thought perhaps that you meant to give the GEA, you know, the ability to appropriate to the GOCO board.
No. We're not trying to make a change like that.
Okay.
We want the GOCO board to administer these funds. The question you're raising is interesting, is whether the way to get those funds into the hand, or those monies, I guess I should say technically, into the hand of the board to do that is perhaps not through an appropriation as such, but through a transfer or in which case. That may be a technical change that would have to be made downstream to accomplish that, and we might want to. I'm being persuaded by what you're saying, but I do want to caution that there is no effort to change the powers or the status of the GOCO board, other than to enable them to administer these monies.
Okay, thank you.
If we've got the wrong verb in there, it's a little late to change that with regard to this initiative. But that's something we would certainly.
Thank you.
Any other questions for Mr. Ramey? Let's move on to consideration of the single subject. Mr. Ramey, I guess I do have a couple of related questions on that. Let me just kind of for the record ask you what the subject is. And then my related question is what is the purpose or the purposes? Because part of the single subject inquiry is that a measure cannot have separate and distinct purposes that are not dependent upon or connected to each other. So just for the record, if you could tell me what you would say the subject is and the purpose or purposes is or are.
I'll answer that question. I'm sort of struggling with your comment in terms of what Justice Coates' dissent was in distinguishing purposes and subjects. I'm not sure how that works, but let me answer your question to the subject. The subject is, again, this is similar to phrases we've used with other severance initiatives, to enhance the revenue flow from gross revenues generated by the severance of oil and gas in the state of Colorado and dedicate the uses for those.
Okay.
And the reason, by the way, I draw the distinction, I'm not sure Justice Coates isn't correct on that point, that when you start talking purposes, there are lots of things to be said, but that is the subject.
And I don't know for sure what a purpose is or purpose is, but I'm assuming that these different uses of the monies, you would at least say, would you say they're connected to each other? I mean,
no, I mean they're. And I think that, I mean that is the classic, and we're certainly going to hear it. Connection with this, we've heard it in connection with every initiative that we brought forward in the severance context, and that is, do the purposes to which the monies are being dedicated have to be related both one to another. So they all have to do with education. They all have to do with natural resources or environmental issues. They all have to do with roads, something of that nature. And the other question of do those purposes have to be related to the source of the revenue in some way related to the oil and gas industry or the impact of the gas industry. I will note for the board that this is a little unique. It's not unique, but this poses a question a little in more stark terms than some of the prior ones, because as the board is certainly aware, having read the newspaper, there was some concern about competing severance tax initiatives. The environmental group would have one. The higher education community has another. And though those purposes were not necessarily related to the source of the revenue, one could argue they were related to each other. Here, we followed the public pressure, I think, well-formulated public pressure to try to dedicate, to form coalitions that can get together and with regard to somewhat disparate uses of the revenues. And I think this is probably the first time the board has been confronted with quite this array of uses. And I'm bringing that out. I know that's going to be a single subject attack, so there's no advantage in lying in the bushes about that. This does that. The consequence, and I still think the single subject is the same, and I would note to the board, not as a challenge, but as a question, that if the board were to conclude that the fact that we have a variety of topics into which funds go generates multiple subjects, then basically what the board has said is that the single subject requirement prohibits coalitions. Public interest, political coalitions from getting together and enhancing a revenue flow and working out a consensual way together to share and distribute the revenue. You said we can't do that. That we got to put it all in the roads. We got to put it all into this. We got to put it all into that. Mr. Domenico's about ready to leap at me. I can see, but this really does pose that question. And I want that on the table, and I want the board to be conscious of that.
I appreciate your laying it out there, and my question is, how do we, and I think you're right, basically, if we were to say this is a single subject problem, we'd be saying that because it is basically a coalition of people who would otherwise be fighting it out, getting together with some sort of a compromise. And the question for me is, how do you distinguish that, which coalition building and nice sounding words, from log rolling, which is one of the things the single subject requirement is specifically intended to avoid?
That is precisely and well put the question. I would suggest to the board that the concept of log rolling, which is basically to do one thing and then tax something unrelated along with that thing, really wholly unrelated in order to generate support for the first thing that you're trying to do. That is basically what log rolling concept historically is. What is going on here is a little different in that what we're trying to do is enhance a single source of revenue and dedicate the uses of that revenue to multiple purposes. Now, one could certainly make the argument, and Mr. Domenico, you just hit it on the head, that the moment that we throw in roads with higher ed, we're now trying to enlist the support of those who want revenues. I would suggest to the board that I can't cite a case, because I don't think this issue has been well enunciated yet before the court or the board in the past, at least that I'm aware of. But if the concept of log rolling is extended to include that sort of thing, where you have multiple purposes generated by a coalition for a single source of enhanced revenue, I think you've expanded the traditional understanding of log rolling a bit, though I understand the nexus. I'm not saying it's a irrational extension, but I think it is a bit of an expansion. And what you've done is suggested that the purpose of the single subject requirement, at least in part, was to prevent coalitions. And I would suggest to the board that we now have to go back a little bit to the genesis of the single subject requirement, that was probably, I would think that was the farthest thing from the minds of the people and the people of the state voting for the single subject requirement. It's one thing if you have completely unrelated purposes. We're going to raise this tax and fund these purposes, and over here we're going to place limitations upon affirmative action. Something that has no nexus or connection, we're going to enlist support for one through the other. But to say that the single subject requirement prevents multiple uses for the enhancement of a single source of revenue through formation of a coalition, frankly, is, in my view, would be a devastating indictment of the effect of the single subject requirement. Basically, you said that initiative proponents cannot form coalitions, if you say that. And I don't mean to challenge the board in such a stark way, but I don't think the single subject requirement was ever intended to be read that way. I don't think there's any support other than perhaps an extension of the log rolling concept for that, you know, for that concept. I hope I'm making some sense and being responsive to your...
No, you are, and I essentially agree with you, and I wish we had some better guidance on this.
I think we're about one way or the other to...
Yeah, I wish, yes, I'm sure you're right. My question, though, is you seem to be relying pretty heavily on the concept of this, the fact that these are all tied together by this enhanced stream of revenue, and it seems to me you kind of have to, because I wonder if a group, a coalition, came in front of us with a proposal to, say, to take away even more of the General Assembly's discretion of how to allocate funds and said, here's how all state revenue is going to be divvied up. We're going to give this percentage to this, we're going to give this percentage to that, basically setting the budget through an initiative.
Doing the long bill through an initiative.
Yeah, or something like that, or a huge chunk of it. It seems to me that would have a real single subject problem. If they just said, we're going to divide up, we're going to do the state budget here in front of us in an initiative. Isn't that basically the same thing you're doing here, except you're just doing it with a new chunk of revenue or with a chunk of revenue from one source? And how does adding on the subject of a new tax or a revision of a certain tax eliminate the single subject problem?
Well, first, I'm intrigued with your idea of doing the long bill by initiative.
Don't get any ideas.
I'm imagining the title for it. But putting that aside, I do think this is different. I think this is more since we are dealing with a single tax, maybe it's a question of where along the spectrum you cross the line to what may be absurdity, which probably trying to do the long bill would be. When you're focused on either creating or enhancing a single identifiable source and only that source of revenue, and then what we're saying is here's how we're going to use the money for that limited source of money, those monies flowing from that specific single enhancement. I don't think the single subject requirement requires either a relation to the source, certainly, because then what you end up with is you can only put the money back into something related to the oil and gas industry, or that it dictates what those various uses can be. Now, if we move to multiple sources of revenue, which flow into the general fund, then I think I would agree with you. I mean, you're now moving into what is essentially an appropriations bill, which, by the way, can have multiple subjects. I think we are dealing with a single source of revenue, dedicating its uses, that's a single subject as opposed to something more like I would agree. I mean, obviously, there's somewhere along the line where you cross from one to the other, and perhaps multiple sources of revenue is the point where you cross that line.
Let me play that out just a little bit, you know, as I'm trying to think this through. I mean, let's use a different tax as an example. Let's take the income tax. I'm assuming you could have an initiative that increases the income tax. I mean, I'm assuming. I'm not 100% sure that's true. I mean, could you have an initiative that simply increases the income tax and does nothing more, which means that it goes into the general fund where the increased revenue could be used to fund anything that the general fund funds. I mean, either in increased amounts for one or hundreds of purposes. But I guess one premise I'm working from is that would still be a single subject.
I think we did that, Mr. Hobbs, close number 13 earlier in the cycle.
Okay.
Last year, three quarters of the funds flowed.
Okay. Well, and I'm
just,
yeah, and I'm just talking pure income tax increase, and likewise, I'm assuming an initiative could increase the income tax rates, and say that the increased revenue would go to a single purpose, you know, higher education. Say, I'm assuming that would be okay. You know, kind of the middle ground then that kind of is more relevant to this is could if you can increase income taxes for all purposes that the general fund supports, and if you can increase the income tax for one purpose, can proponents choose to increase the income tax for just two purposes, two separate and distinct purposes, higher education and roads? I mean, is that all? Do the proponents have the right, if they can decide that it's one purpose, do the proponents in an initiative have the right to say that it's for two purposes? Or do they have to pick either one purpose or any purposes that the general fund can support?
I think they can do something in the middle of that. And I want to try to respond intelligently. Once they put the money in the General Assembly, or in the general fund, I would have some problem with proponents then telling the General Assembly how to appropriate monies out of the general fund, either to one or multiple sources. In terms of creating a stream of revenue, I would suggest to the board that the proponents can dedicate uses for that stream of revenue, as is done by single subject bills through the legislature. Well, that can be done, and those uses don't have to be related. It's not a dictation to the General Assembly as to how to appropriate something out of the general fund that's just being proposed. I guess I'm not stating this very articulately, but I would suggest that the single subject requirement shouldn't prevent the creation or enhancement of a revenue stream and the dedication of uses for nothing other than those monies in that revenue stream. And we certainly know we can dedicate it to a single use. I'm going to put aside from whether that use has to be related to the source, assuming that it doesn't. But now I think we've explored that we can dedicate to multiple uses related to each other. To take the next step and add some additional uses may be unrelated to those other uses is really no different, other than, I think, from single subject perspective. I don't want to get into a sort of a constitutional argument to where do we assume the power of appropriation, which I don't think we're getting into here, but I think it would be a post-adoption challenge anyway. But in terms of single subject, I think Mr. Domenico identified the appropriate analysis. Is there some point where that becomes log rolling?
Mm-hmm.
And again, my response to Mr. Domenico is that, and I can't cite a case, and I don't think one could be cited back to me necessarily, either, because I don't think we've really confronted this, but when you're dealing with divvying up a particular stream of revenue, the existence of multiple uses, I would suggest, is outside the concept of log rolling. Now, if we're going to do something else, create another stream at the same time and dedicate those uses, then we may have log rolling.
I mean, and if, just to follow up on that, I mean, this idea of coalitions versus log rolling, I think, is really interesting. I mean, it's sounding awfully subjective. I mean, which is not a way that I looked at the log rolling issue in the past. In other words, it seemed like you could have two different groups that each see an attractive tax, say the severance tax, that that might help fund their group's purpose, and they might become a coalition because they think each of them separately can't get their measure passed. But if they combine forces, in fact, there'll be enough people that would support one or the other that they could, and that's log rolling, I mean, that they could get their measure passed.
Well, let me reframe what you said, Mr. Hobbs, if I could. The reason for getting together may also be a determination on the part of both of those groups you just defined that this is a more fiscally responsive, responsible way to proceed.
And I understand that. Actually, that's why I say this is kind of subjective, is how do we know? I mean, does it really matter? Are we supposed to look into kind of why did you get together?
I want to agree with that with as much vehemence as I agree with Mr. Domenico's comment as identifying the issue, and I would invoke Justice Coates, albeit in dissent in 55 on this. There is a real difference between identifying subject of an initiative and trying, in this board attempting to delve into the purposes or motivations or intent of the proponents of the initiative. Proponents of the initiative getting together like this may well decide, you know, we can't get anything passed unless we all get together and we attract each other's supporters and we attract each other's money to go forward with the initiative. Sure, the proponents may also get together and say, you know, we have a responsibility to do something fiscally responsible in the best interest of this state as a whole, and this is the way to do it. And that would not be log rolling. And I think it's very dangerous. I don't know how this board, not just dangerous, I don't know practically how this board starts delving in the purposes and intents. The question is subject. And I go back to the fact that the subject is the enhancement of the stream of revenue and the dedication of its uses. And this initiative does pose, and I have no question in my mind that whatever this board does, this will be vetted out, but this does pose starkly the question of can you have disparate uses for those revenues, i.e., can you have a coalition get together for the most base purposes or the most publicly and fiscally responsible ends and purposes imaginable, and if the single subject is held up as a barrier to that, I would suggest that is a serious consequence, but I think an unintended consequence of the single subject. I'm aware of nothing that suggests that the single subject requirement should be interpreted in that fashion. I've rambled a bit, and I apologize.
No, I think it's helpful. I don't know. Well, we're.
Ms. Eubanks is not waiting on this. But I mean, it is. I don't want that question to be missed by this board because I mean that is a very central concern, and it is central to the ability.
Ms. Eubanks?
Well, since Mr. Ramey wanted me to to comment, and just for the record, I mean we've struggled with this issue on previous versions of severance tax initiatives that we've seen this cycle, whether or not this one sort of is moving down that spectrum of more diverse purposes for which the revenue stream is being used. But I think knowing where you draw the line, if you draw the line, I don't know where that is. And at this point, I'm uncomfortable drawing the line without more guidance from the court, and maybe one of these measures will provide us that guidance in the future.
I have no doubt.
in the future, but at this point, that I'm uncomfortable drawing the line and saying, I mean, because I mean, I see the argument on the other side. I mean, you could argue that it is log rolling, that you know some folks would be in favor of this change in the severance tax law of revenue stream for wildlife habitat and not for higher education. And they feel like the only way that they can get it for the purpose that they prefer is to go along with the higher ed, and vice versa, those folks supporting an enhanced revenue stream for higher education purposes. I mean, I see the argument there. I'm just uncomfortable at this point in time drawing that line, and perhaps part of that comes from my experience with the legislature and knowing that the single subject requirement is an outgrowth of the single subject requirement for bills, and just based on past history, I know the General Assembly has done bills, you know, it'd be revenue source and multiple purposes, some perhaps connected to the source of the revenue and others perhaps not, like Mr. Hobbs was suggesting, you know, income tax for general fund purposes. So while I think that the discussion of the issue is great, I mean, it's there, it's an issue, I think I'm still where I was on earlier measures. I'm not willing to draw the line at this point and say this approach violates single subject.
And I agree with that. This doesn't really seem like a log rolling situation quite to me. You know, when I look at 1-40-106.5, you know, which was enacted as a companion to this constitutional single subject requirement, and in which the General Assembly says that they're intending to inhibit certain practices, and with respect to log rolling, it's to, you know, forbid the treatment of incongruous subjects in the same measure, especially the practice of putting together one measure subjects having no necessary or proper connection for the purpose of enlisting support, et cetera. So it isn't like you've got A and you've got B and we're combining them. Rather, I'm accepting for now that the subject here is the severance tax. And then the question is, though, what if you're going to increase that tax? What purposes are the increased revenues going to be used for? It's not quite a log rolling situation. I mean, I can see that, again, going back to our discussion, it has implications depending on how coalitions might form. But mostly, this doesn't seem like log rolling. And what Ms. Eubank struck me as far as you know, the fact that If we do look to the way the General Assembly has, you know, has interpreted and used the single subject requirement for bills, I think there's precedent there, and that same statutory section says that it's the intent of the General Assembly that in setting titles, the title board should apply judicial decisions construing the single subject requirement for bills. I mean, I don't know that. You know, I'm still trying to force that just a little bit, but I think we ought to take into account the practices of the General Assembly that you know, it's reasonable guidance for us on how we look at the single subject requirement. Well, I don't know. I mean, we'll maybe get some more guidance at some point. I don't have anyone else signed up to testify on the single subject question. Is there anybody else who wishes to comment on that question? If not, then I'll either ask for more discussion or a motion with respect to whether number 88 complies with the single subject requirement. Ms. Eubank?
I believe that proposed initiative number 88 contains a single subject, and that I move that the board proceed to set a title.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? Mr. Domenico.
I don't know if putting my thoughts on the record serves any purpose, but I'll do it anyway. I mean, what Mr. Hobbs said is, I mean, if you look at it as the subject here is the severance tax, and then, golly, we've got all this new revenue, we got to figure out something to do with it, then sure, this is just a single subject about what to do with this money that fell into our laps. But if you look at it the other way, which is, you've got here, we are treating a number of disparate subjects. Money funding grants for transportation purposes. Money for the institutions of higher education. Money for the College Opportunity Fund. Funding for native wildlife habitat. funding for new energy programs. And then, well, how are we going to come up with the money to do all this? Then we, well, let's increase the tax. So it really sort of depends on which way you look at it. I mean, very easily you could fit this, I think, into the language of the statute forbidding treatment of disparate subjects. Just depends on how you look at it. I mean, you could give Mr. Ramey a nightmare scenario where a conservative coalition got together and said, well, this is probably not really imaginable in Colorado anymore, but if there was a conservative coalition that got together and wanted to eliminate a number of state agencies, and they got together and said, well, we want to get rid of the agencies that fund, I don't know, minority advancement programs. We want to get rid of funding for all these regulatory bodies. We want to get rid of funding for gun control. And we're going to tie it together by saying that all the money saved is going to be refunded to the people or given to some other purpose. Well, that coalition could say, hey, the purpose here is to save money, save the state money. And that's just a mirror image of what you've got going on here, where you're saying, well, the purpose of this is to raise money, and then we got to figure out what to do with it, and we're going to spread it out. And so, I mean, everybody's right. There's not really any clear guidance on this. I'm leaning towards voting in favor of it at the moment, just for the reasons stated that we tend to lean in trying to get things on the ballot. And this is really borderline at best, I think. I mean, one thing, you identified two different types of potential problems. One is simply having disparate subjects being funded, and the other is, do they have to then be related to the purpose, to the tax itself, to the revenue source? And I looked at the tying of the revenue source to the disparate purposes a little bit differently. The reason I thought that was relevant in some of the previous measures was that if the purposes were different, say education or county funding and wildlife habitat, those are generally unrelated to one another. But if they could be tied to the purpose of the tax, that is, if the reason you needed to fund certain counties or to fund certain wildlife could be tied to the tax, to impacts caused by oil and gas development on wildlife habitat or on schools or certain counties, then I thought that eliminated the tie to the purpose of the tax, the tie to the source of the revenue, eliminated the problem with the disparate subjects of the funding. This, I think, really doesn't do either of those things, and so this, to me, is really borderline. I'm going to vote in favor of it today, but I'm not confident that I'll stay in that position. And I appreciate your arguments. I mean, it I don't know where the line between log rolling and coalition building is, but you could just as easily say that this has a number of subjects, which is funding a bunch of different things that a bunch of different groups want to fund, and they've found a way to do it. Or you could just say, well, we've got to increase this severance tax and then do something with the money, as Mr. Hobbs characterized it, and I just don't know which is right at this point.
If there's no other discussion, then the motion is to approve the measure on single subject grounds. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Then let's turn to the staff drafts. Ms. Gomez has displayed the staff drafts on the screen. Mr. Ramey, have you had a chance to look at the staff drafts, and do you have any comment?
I have, Mr. Chairman. And I guess I have two comments, and they're related to each other. They have to do with a possible, and I don't know if this is the case, they both have to do with the OSB, the way this tax is designed to work, and I would refer the board to our Section 3 and the change in the rate in new 3929-105-1C, is that if for what will now be operators, if gross income is $300,000 and over, if it's under $300,000, they are not taxed. If it is $300,000 and over, the tax is on 5% of total gross income. This is a little different from exempting everything under $300,000. If total gross income reaches $300,000, that taxpayer is going to pay the tax at 5% on everything from zero all the way up. That gives rise, I guess, to two concerns. One in the draft, and I'll point this out first, and then I want to go to the number and the RPG estimate. On line 4, it reads, oil and gas extracted in the state by exempting gross income. It's really exempting operators with gross income. So I guess I'm going to suggest, let me get both these suggestions out, let me figure out what the board wants to do with it. I guess I'm going to suggest that the words operators with be inserted between exempting and gross income. That is really the effect of the thing. We're not exempting all gross income. Second point, and related to that, is I've read the OSPB estimate and have no difficulty with that number. I can't tell from the estimate whether they have made this calculation based upon an exemption of all gross income below $300,000 or an exemption of operators with gross income less. So my request, if this is possible, I'll need the advice of the board on this, would be for the moment operating the assumption that that OSPB interpreted the way that I described this measure is intended to operate, use that number unless somebody gave us. But inquire back to OSPB if they did it correctly, and if they did not, I guess I would file a motion for rehearing on our own initiative solely for the purpose of adjusting that number if that becomes necessary. In 2 weeks. I'm sure we're going to have a motion for rehearing anyway. I just can't tell from OSPB's.
I'm okay with doing that. I'm just trying to reread what they said in the estimate, and I guess I'm not clear on it. I mean, I see the part at the end where they say that it's not possible to estimate the net effect of eliminating the small well exemption and exempting the first 300,000, but I don't think that really goes to.
Mr. Hobbs, up in the first paragraph, I'm looking at the memo in the.
Okay.
Fourth line, they say, and exempt the first $300,000 of gross income from taxation. I don't know what they're saying there. I'm not sure which of the two approaches is the two.
Okay.
It may be the correct one. Maybe you're way ahead of me on this. Now, I guess contingent on, the request is somewhat contingent on them being able to respond in time to either file a motion for rehearing if that becomes jurisdictional in that issue. But the bottom line is if they've not calculated it the way that we would like to adjust the number to the actual.
Ms. Eubanks?
I'm just, not that it necessarily clarifies the situation, but looking back at the information that was provided on number 78, which was another initiative dealing with severance tax, that in many ways is similar to this measure. It didn't change the point of sale in terms of imposing it on operators, but it did take more of the approach of the exemption of the first 300,000 rather than the way that the current measure 88 has, that if you meet that $300,000 threshold, then all gross income is taxed at the 5% rate. Now, what's interesting is that for the $300,000 and above that would have been taxable under number 78, it was taxed at a rate of 4.85%, which is a little lower than the 5% that's included in 88. And I'm just pointing this out for comparison, that in that the fiscal impact provided by OSPB for 78, the figure was $206.9 million. The figure that's being provided to us on 88 is what, the $213.3 million, which, just my guess, is that may only be a difference of the difference in the rate between the 4.85% and the 5%, with the general assumption that under 300,000 is exempt, perhaps. And so it may at least warrant an inquiry of OSPB in clarification of the figure that they provided us as to whether or not, similar to the assumptions that they made on 78, whether they used those assumptions incorrectly in coming up with the figure for number 88. And I just point that out as for comparison purposes.
As a proponent of 78 as well, I don't think we have, we're here for a hearing on that.
Right, but
might be a way to handle that. We certainly love the accurate figure.
It just, my gut reaction would be that if under 78, the first 300,000 is always exempt, and that was what that number, that estimate was based upon, versus the estimate for 88. If you're taxing all of it once you've hit the $300,000 threshold, I would think it would generate a lot more revenue than just the difference.
Actually, Ms. Eubanks, I don't mean to interrupt. I'm not sure that's the case.
Well, I don't know.
Because
but
I think most
because
taxpayers may be above that level.
Because
so
they never hit the threshold. I don't know. But
so, yeah, we may. That's why I'm a bit confused. I look at this number and I can't really tell.
Just for informational purposes. To confuse
the issue. I mean, one possibility would be to go ahead and work on the staff draft, but maybe lay it over even into this afternoon to see if we can get some clarification over the lunch hour. I don't know that we can, but years ago we sometimes had somebody from OSPB who was regularly here back when we actually did fiscal statements as part of a summary. But that was a long time ago. So but it may be. So I was sort of thinking, we haven't asked anybody from OSPB to be present on a regular basis. But it's possible we could get some clarification. I just don't know whether it's if we have everything done except for the amount of the tax, then we could finish that up this afternoon, perhaps, if we were able to get clarification.
And I'd be happy to come back this afternoon to do that. Or, as I say, I mean, I would be happy to have that addressed. I would be shocked if we don't have it here.
Well, and that might be the safer way to do it, because I just don't know. I know they're busy, and I it may be safer just to try to use what we have and then lay it over. I mean, the catch is I think we'd still have to I guess we wouldn't. I was trying to think if we had to have an answer within the 7-day period for a motion for rehearing, but as long as you're counting on somebody filing a motion for rehearing.
Well, the other thing I suppose I could do is file a conditional motion for rehearing based upon what their response is.
And you could
withdraw it, file one, and then withdraw it.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's the way to go.
I would be surprised, though, if there's going to be a question.
Okay. Well, let's proceed with that in mind, then, and use the estimate. I would suggest we use the estimate that we've got, and then we'll see if we can get some clarification.
It may be correct. They may have done it exactly right.
Okay. Ms. Eubanks?
Then I would suggest making the change offered by Mr. Ramey there on line 4, after exempting, inserting operators with.
I'll second that. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks?
In terms of the phrase that is on line 5, changing the point of taxation for the tax, I'm not sure that tells anybody other than maybe me what is intended by that phrase. And so I would suggest perhaps reworking it, perhaps something along the line of changing the point of sale at which the tax is imposed or something, because I just don't think, while I do think it's an important change that should be noted in the title, I just don't know the way it's currently phrased tells the normal person much of anything. And so I would suggest striking that entire, well, let's see, yeah, strike the entire, I guess you can leave the changing. Changing the point, you can leave. Strike the rest of the phrase. And I'm open to suggestions here, but maybe say changing the point of sale at which the tax is imposed.
Just say imposing the tax at the time of the first sale or something like that.
Perhaps. I guess I'm a little concerned that, you know, that folks understand this is a change from sort of the current law.
Yeah.
I mean, it is currently imposed at a point of sale, and you're changing that point. If you just say, as you suggested, whether or not they get the idea that it's a change versus an entirely new concept. I don't know. Like I said, I don't quite know how to deal with this. It's a difficult concept to try to state in plain English. I mean, whether you get rid of the point, maybe you just say changing the sale. Maybe you say changing the sale of oil and gas on which the tax is imposed. I don't know, maybe that's... I mean, it's still a sale of oil and gas, it's just a different sale.
Changing the point in time at which the tax is imposed to the first sale? I mean, I don't have a great idea.
I don't think anyone will have any idea what any of the things we've suggested so far mean. I don't know what any of them mean. Yeah. I mean, could we just say imposing the tax at the time of the first sale rather than whatever
a later sale.
Yeah, rather than where when it currently is.
Mr. Robotham just had a suggestion. What about some language simplifying the collection of the tax? And the reason I say that is the point of this is to reduce and focus the tax collection activity on a small group of identifiable people, disparate group. I'm wondering if we could reframe that a little bit. I just heard this. How'd you put that again? There might be some advantage in not the action itself, but further focus on the effect of the action. Simplify how the tax is done.
That sounds like an argument in favor. That sounds like something I could vote for.
He's a lot smarter. that at least I understand. I agree.
It's more subjective.
It's more subjective. I mean, I appreciate that's probably, I think I understand the basis, and it's not unreasonable, but it does sound like it's a judgment about what's happening instead of it'd be better to say what's happening, if we could. I mean, we're not.
I share Mr. Domenico's concern. That I wrote it, but I'm having trouble stating it in title language.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody knows what point of sale at which a tax is imposed means. But my suggestion, I don't think anybody would knows what that would mean either, really, what the first sale is.
Would it be an accurate statement to say that it requires operators to pay the tax?
I think the statement you have there is accurate, and that statement is accurate. Operators is defined. At some point,
I mean,
have to stop and
I guess the only thing that worries me is my recollection was that if you had an interest owner, who takes oil and gas, I assume, is a payment for the royalty. Is that what, you know, when you look at the language, and I'm looking in 3929.105.1c, you know, it talks about the tax shall be levied against every operator for the gross income from the sale of oil and gas severed by the operator, except that each interest owner who takes production in kind, which I assume that they take it in oil and gas, from the operator shall be responsible for the tax. So I don't know. It's
right.
So so that's sort of an exception to the general rule that operators always pay the tax? Or maybe you could say requiring operators to pay the tax in most circumstances? Recognizing an exception, or rather than talking about point of sale? Or maybe imposing the tax on sales by operators, sale of oil and gas by operators. Help me here.
Well, that is kind of, I guess, operators kind of includes within it the concept of the people who take the oil out and make the first sale. So that's pretty similar to what I first said, but uses operator instead of first sale, which I'm fine with. It then has the same problem, though, with mine, which is it doesn't give the changing, doesn't tell you that you're changing it, although I'm not sure that's, I don't know that I think that's all that important. I mean, we've already said there's an existing tax, and then if we just say, here's where the tax is being imposed, that pretty strongly implies we're changing it. If it doesn't, then I'm not sure it's material whether that it's being changed. I don't know.
Well,
I mean,
if you talk about just going sort of the route of imposing the tax on sales by operators rather than producers, I mean, at least that would get. But I don't. Yeah.
The problem with that is
most people won't know the difference between an operator,
right,
and a producer.
Right. Yeah. Those are two pretty technical terms. Yeah. That. I mean, one of them's a new term defined here. Define it, I guess, in the title.
I'd rather not. I just don't know that that's a major.
Well, I mean, what if you said imposing the tax on the net proceeds
or something like that, the net amount attributable to the first sale made by operators, or something like that. First sale of oil and gas by operators, which is similar, includes both the kind of, I don't know that first sale is all that clear of a concept, but it gets a little bit of the point across that it's not continually imposed on people. I don't know.
Offer, I mean.
All right, I guess what I would say is, instead of that clause, say something like imposing the tax on the net. I mean, is net proceeds accurate, or is that?
I'd be careful with that.
As yeah.
Net back is part of the gross definition.
I mean, the actual statement is the net amount attributable, or you could say
gross income.
Gross income. From, hold on a second. You could say something like gross income from. Does that make sense? So instead of net, I would say
gross
income from the first sale of oil and gas by an operator. And then delete the rest of that up to and eliminating. Okay, I suppose.
Would you type any better?
No.
I wouldn't type under would pressure.
to that comma. I mean, it doesn't tell you that the current system is something other than that directly, but the fact that we're stating it kind of suggests that. So I sort of think people who care about the current system one way or the other would recognize that that signals that something important's happening, and to the rest of us who don't really care how the tax is imposed and care more about its amount and what it's used for, then it's sort of irrelevant. So I think I'm okay with something like that. It's not great, but.
Mr. Amy, you're okay with that?
We're okay with
it. I'll move that change.
I'll second it.
Any further discussion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
On line 8, I would suggest removing the language beginning in 2009, comma. That's consistent with other titles that we've done, that are types of provisions. We just, it's not that important in terms of the time frame. I would move that change.
I'll second it.
That's been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Ms. Eubanks.
The last suggestion I have is in regard to the list of purposes for which the monies are to be used, and specifically down in the third category where it's the severance tax stabilization trust fund monies, and where it talks about using it for new energy economy programs, preservation of native wildlife habitat, the College Opportunity Fund, higher education. The higher education phrase bothers me because it's more than just higher education in general. It's very specific. It's the fee-for-service contracts. And obviously, at least I'm assuming that the monies are being going to the College Opportunity Fund and being used for the fee-for-service contracts for certain TABOR purposes relating to the enterprise status of institutions of higher ed. And I just think it's important to give a little bit more specifics rather than just higher education in general. It is for a specific purpose, and perhaps we want to say higher education contracts for certain services. I don't know that fee-for-service necessarily gives people a lot more information, but at least to say that it's higher education contracts for services, or you could say, you know, contracts for certain services provided by higher institutions of higher ed. That's wordier, but so say contracts for certain services. I just think that would be a little bit more specific than the broad generalization of higher education.
I second that.
Any comment, Mr. Ramey? Okay.
That change.
Do I need to move it?
yeah, that wasn't quite a motion, was it? Oh,
I would move that change.
I'll second it then.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0.
I have one structural question. Reading this, I was a little confused because you say, hey, we're raising taxes, and then the first thing you talk about is modifying the existing severance tax by creating an exemption, and then the part where you're actually raising more money is down at the end of the discussion of the tax. And my suggestion was to move up the elimination part to the beginning, modifying the existing severance tax by, and then eliminating both an exemption and then just keeping everything the same, but moving the part that raises more money to the beginning. I just find it odd that you say, well, we're increasing taxes by exempting operators with gross income below a specified dollar amount. It's just kind of odd to me. So,
Ms. Eubanks?
Mr. Domenico's comment raises an interesting question. Also, is part of the increase in revenues due to the fact that for the once you hit the threshold that you're subject to the tax, it's being taxed at a higher rate than it currently is being taxed, and whether we should that it's not just the elimination of the stripper well exemption or the ad valorem credit, but also
adjusting the rates.
It's also a rate increase for
this. But what I don't know, I'm not even sure this can be answered, is that effect of that. We're changing the rates, we're exempting people with, I'm not sure what the net effect is, just isolating that one factor of changing, increasing the rate on operators with gross income of $300,000 or for the portion up to $300,000 versus wholly exempting, in other words, reducing the rate on operators with gross income less than that. How that balances out, I don't know if that's a tax increase or reduction.
Well, but I think how it balances out in terms of the aggregate impact of all the changes that the measure's making, whether it's because now it's on the first sale by operators, whether it's because of the exemption. But it is a statement of fact that it does increase the rate. I mean, how that is reflected is going to be more, I think, for the figure of what your, how it nets out in terms of how much state tax revenues would be increased. But in terms of having the statement that it is definitely a rate increase for that income, you know, once you've hit the $300,000 threshold, they'll be paying more tax on the entire amount of income than they are currently. I think perhaps you have to have that in there because it is a rate increase.
Right, and the net effect is what's in the first sentence, right, of all of the things.
I would think so.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So can I make a suggestion that we take what's on line 7 and the first half of line 8 and move that to line 4 after yeah, we'll end up having to delete and move it somewhere else, but that's fine. I'll just cut that for now and move it to after by on line 4 between by and exempting. So delete and. And then, let's see. There's a space missing now on line 6. There is, right there is probably where you would put that concept in, I think.
About the rate.
Let me just insert one other comment, Mr. Domenico, if I could, on this concept you're about to insert. And this is troubling me, and I'm not sure it matters, but we're also lowering tax.
Right.
For certain taxpayers.
Which is reflected. I mean, you have that statement about exempting operators with gross income below a specified dollar amount from the tax.
Yeah, and I thought...
There, but not the fact that for those that are subject to the tax, they'll be paying more on the total amount of gross income.
Right. I wouldn't have wanted to say raising the amount paid by operator, raising the percentage or something like that. You could specify, you could get pretty specific, or you could just say something like adjusting the rates paid by certain taxpayers, certain taxpayers.
Well, logically, does it make sense to, after the phrase, because you talk about those who are exempted, and then for those then who are remaining subject to the tax, you make a statement about modifying the rate of tax imposed, I don't know, on operators subject to the tax or, you know, something.
Yeah, I mean, you could do it either before or after. Those two go together, I think
right.
You're right. You could either do it going along with my thinking that the way you're raising more funds should kind of come at the beginning. I'd put it between producers and exempting on line 6, say something like either increasing the rate of tax paid by operators with gross income above a specified dollar amount, or adjusting. I mean, increasing is correct, right? That's accurate.
Increasing part of it. That's the difficulty.
So, yeah, that's right. It would be increasing the rate paid on income over a certain amount.
Adjusting, actually, I'm not really advocating here, but I'm thinking that might be.
Would it be possible, and perhaps to somehow consolidate, because both in terms of describing who's now subject to the tax at the rate as it's been modified, and those that are exempted, I mean, it all ties to gross income below a specified dollar amount. So perhaps if you have that phrase, use it to describe, you know, in terms of whether it's modifying the rate of tax imposed on operators with gross income above a specified dollar amount and exempting operators with gross income below said dollar amount or such dollar amount or the dollar, that dollar amount. I mean, try to...
Well, the only way I can think of to do it that, to combine the two concepts, would be to say something like adjusting the rates, adjusting the tax rate paid by operators based on their gross income, based on the amount of their gross income or something like that. And then you get the... Otherwise, I think you just got to separate them out and say it's raised if you're over a certain amount and exempted under a certain
amount.
Same
amount.
Is it important to us or to the proponents to get the idea of this exemption explicitly stated in there, or is it enough to say we're adjusting the rates for people based on their gross income?
I think, Mr. Domenico, adjusting or modifying.
For everybody.
That would be okay with us. And I'm having trouble finding another way to do this without filling three lines.
Yeah. Well, the only way, yeah, you could either add an entire new little clause that says raising the rate on certain operators, raising the rate on tax paid on gross income over a certain amount, or just say, simplify it all and say modifying the tax rate paid based on the gross income of operators. Okay, well then...
I think that might, because, I mean, for those that are exempted, their tax rate now becomes zero.
Right.
And so I think that would be inaccurate.
Yeah, so I guess I would say adjusting the tax rates... aid. Well, I'd say imposed instead of paid. Imposed on operators based on the amount of their gross income. Yes. And do we need to say gross income from oil and gas? And I'd say their gross income, or the operator's gross income.
Probably makes sense to tie it in with oil and gas.
Say, just put there for now. Yeah. And then at the end, say from oil and gas. Then delete that next clause about exempting. Yeah, all the way to the comma. I think we should use semicolons for these. There's a series where we need commas later. Yeah.
Chairman, can I make two suggested tweaks to that? I like the language. First off, based on the amount of their gross income from the sale of oil and gas, probably be more accurate.
Yeah, that's good.
Second, somehow that word imposed just grabs me by the throat. I wonder if we could use assessed or something of that nature. Imposed is a grading word.
or levied? The measures talks about the tax shall be levied.
Levied is fine.
Fine with me.
I'm being picky with that.
It's levied, L-E-V-I-E-D.
Is there a motion?
I move that we make those changes.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. Any other changes? So do we want to go ahead and put a number in the blank based on the estimate that we have?
Is
213.3 million.
Mr. Ramey?
I also just spotted one other on line 8. It says by an operator. Something needs to change.
I think it should be operator, or could make it just operators, yeah.
Although this is a long exercise, I guess for the record I'll go ahead and read the way we have it at this point so we can decide whether there's any other changes. The title then would read, based on changes so far, state taxes shall be increased by $213.3 million annually by an amendment to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning the severance tax on oil and gas extracted in the state, comma, in connection therewith, comma, for taxable years commencing on or after January 1, 2009, comma, modifying the existing severance tax on oil and gas extracted in the state by eliminating both an exemption for wells with minimal production and a credit against the tax based on property taxes paid by producers. Semicolon. Adjusting the tax rate levied on operators based on the amount of their gross income from the sale of oil and gas. Semicolon. Imposing the tax on the gross income from the first sale of oil and gas by operators. Semicolon. Exempting revenues from the tax and related investment income from state and local government spending limits, semicolon. No, is that a semicolon? Okay. And requiring specified percentages of the tax revenues to be credited to paren 1, the state severance tax trust fund, comma, paren 2, the local government severance tax fund, comma, and 3, the severance tax stabilization trust fund, comma, which the measure creates to be used to fund new energy economy programs, comma, the preservation of native wildlife habitat, comma, the college opportunity fund, comma, higher education contracts for certain services, comma, and transportation grants to counties and municipalities impacted by the severance of oil and gas, period. Any further changes to the title? Is there, Ms. Eubanks?
I would move that we adopt the title as reflected on the screen.
I'll second that. And with the understanding that the same changes would be made in the ballot title and submission clause. If there's no other discussion, then all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion carries 3-0. That completes action on number 88. The time is 11:15. Shall we take a short 5-minute break? Then we need to, we've got 3 other agenda items, which I'm hoping we can get through pretty quickly because we need a break in order to come back at 1 o'clock. So we'll take a 5-minute break.